Good morning. Whether you're joining us online or here at the church, welcome to First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. We are a spiritual community dedicated to a free and responsible search for truth, meaning, and beauty. I'm Reverend Chris Jimerson, the lead minister. I am white, still clinging to my early 60s, and my pronouns are he, him. It is a joy to be with you this morning. I especially want to welcome you if you're new to the congregation. If you're joining us remotely, and if you can, please say hello in the comments and let us know from where you're watching the service. If you're here in person, please join us for the social hour after worship. Either way, we invite you to fill out our online visitor form. Just go to austinuu.org, click on worship, and then scroll to the link for that form. If you would fill that out, we would love to get to know you just a little bit better. Here we welcome everyone, every beginning and path, every beautiful expression of human flowering, all pronouns, all the ways and ones we love, all abilities or disabilities, each and every one of you. You are welcome here. You belong here. We come from a long tradition of sensing that an ocean of divine love flows through each of us. And it's in that tradition that I invite you to greet the holy among us, either in the comments online or by turning to those around you here at the church.
Good morning again. I'm Angela Smith, pronouns she, her, and I have the honor of being your lay leader today. I'm a just-turned 81-year-old white woman who's grateful to be in a church where diversity, equity, and inclusion are not bad words. Where no one dictates what we can read. Where academic freedom is more important than 10 commandments posted on a classroom wall. And where we were reminded so eloquently in yesterday's memorial service for Meg, that we are held together and are called to build on our legacy of fierce and holy love. Please join me now in the words by which we light our chalice. This is the flame we hold in our hearts as we strive for justice for everyone. This is the light we shine upon systems of oppression until they are no more. This is the warmth we share with one another as our struggle becomes our salvation. Our call to worship is Clearing by Martha Postlethwaite. Do not try to save the whole world or do anything grandiose. Instead, create a clearing in the dense forest of your life and wait there patiently until the song that is your life falls into your own cupped hands and you recognize and greet it. Only then will you know how to give yourself to this world so worthy a rescue.
One of the things that holds First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin together as a religious community is that we have a common religious purpose. And for this church, that purpose is our mission. The congregation wrote it together. We put it on the wall in our sanctuary, and those of us in worship each Sunday say it together so that we might more readily carry it in our hearts throughout the week. Let's do so now. Together, we nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice to build the beloved community.
We all wanna change the world. talk about destruction. Don't you know that you can count me out? Money for people with minds that hate. All I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait. Your mind instead. But if you side with people who hide their face, ain't gonna make it with anyone, any place.
Our reading is from Restoring Sanity by Margaret J. Wheatley, and it's especially appropriate for what's going on today in this crazy, mixed-up world. At this time, when lives and possibilities are destroyed by casual, destructive decisions, I aspire for us to be sane leaders devoted to restoring and awakening the finest qualities of being human. Our generosity, creativity, and kindness. We may not change the world, but we can create islands of sanity where our human spirits come alive and we contribute in ways that make more possible.
This is the time in our service when we center ourselves together. We breathe together. And breathing together, we sense one another's loving presence, even across virtual space. Breathing in, breathing out, we follow our breath to a deeper place inside. Place of greater wisdom, a place of sanity, a place where an ocean of divine love flows through each of us. breathing together. We enter into a time of music and sacred quiet together, all the while remembering we also hold sacred human sounds, including those of small children. As we enter this time of music and quiet meditation, I invite you to keep in your heart and mind members of this community who are ill or in sorrow, and those who are celebrating joys. Our hearts go out to all those affected by the deaths and losses from the mass shootings here in Austin last night. And today we especially mourn the loss of beloved Minister Emerita, Reverend Meg Barnhouse, whose memorial service we held at the church yesterday. Our hearts go out to her wife, Kaya, her family, and the many, many, many of us who loved her. May we continue to swim with her in that great river of love that flows through our universe and that she called God. Entering the meditative quiet as our music plays, let us hold that meditative quiet throughout, including when our music comes to an end.
Steps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know we're talking about a revolution? It sounds like a whisper. Poor people gonna rise up, get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's theirs. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know they're talking about a revolution? It sounds like a whisper. And started to turn, talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn, talk about a revolution. Talking about a revolution. Talking about a revolution. Oh, no. Talking about a revolution. Talking about a revolution. Oh, talking about a revolution.
We have lit one last candle for all those for whom there is no one to light a candle. Furrowed and runneled and rough the gnarled bark of this old cottonwood. The dead thickness protects living tissue from cold, from wind, from flames. I, too, am older, but somehow survival shows up for me the opposite. Any shields I would build up as barriers, life keeps peeling them away. What thickens around me now are layers of dynamic compassion, vital, vulnerable, ever growing. They do not protect against wounds. Instead, they seem to say, be with what aches, my dear. Trusting discomfort is the only way. The layers. A poem by Rosemary Wattola Trommer. So, I've been out on sabbatical for 2 months, leaving me way too much time to think, overthink that cherished Unitarian Universalist pastime and spiritual practice. And I've been reading and watching and grieving what is happening in our communities, our nation, our world. A racist president posting racist themes on social media. A continuing cover-up by our Department of Supposed Justice of the sexual abuse and trafficking of children by some of the most powerful people in this country, including potentially people within our current administration, going all the way up to the president himself. Not so veiled threats to voting and democracy. Continuing attempts at the erasure of BIPOC folks, LGBTQI plus folks, and so many more at the Smithsonian, the Stonewall National Monument, and on, illegal military actions, wag the dog war like the one just started. The invasion and occupation of U.S. cities and states by our own national government, the latest and perhaps most egregious in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I am so proud of and so grateful to our Reverend Carey for answering that call. Answering that call for faith leaders to go to Minneapolis to bear witness and engage in resistance to the state-inflicted terror, violence, and murder being committed by our federal government on the streets of that city. Well, I could go on and on, and I know all of you could too, about the many desecrations of love, justice, compassion, democracy, equity, the very foundations of the way so many of us construct our moral, ethical worldview, not to mention the very foundations of our faith and that of so many world religions, the values to which this country of ours has always claimed to aspire, but has never lived out. So, my beloveds, I have been thinking about a revolution. And this morning, as our song said earlier, we are going to be talking about a revolution. Don't give this overthinker too much sabbatical time anymore, apparently. I started with that poem earlier because I've been thinking that if we truly want a revolution, truly want to change the world, we are going to have to learn to think about the revolution in new ways. We are going to have to realize that the revolution we really want, that revolution that ultimately creates the beloved community, what that revolution is up against is a political ideology that turns racism, white supremacy, patriarchy, white nationalism, other faith xenophobia, and multiple other forms of bigotry and oppression into a religion. A religion that is quite frequently, fraudulently claimed to be Christianity. And this ideology, this idolatry, is not new. Indeed, we are a nation that, while founded in those aspirational values I mentioned earlier, was also founded in slavery, racism, patriarchy, classism, and casteism, and so much more. So, this revolution is also not new. This revolution is ongoing. It is a continuation of the revolution BIPOC folks and feminists and womanists and LGBTQI plus folks and so many more have been waging for centuries now. It is a continuing revolution that will not be short. A revolution that will never be easy. A revolution that will too often continue to be opposed with the destruction of life and the spilling of blood as we've just witnessed in Minnesota and elsewhere. And so, to sustain the kind of systemic, institutional, cultural change that such an ongoing, long-term revolution will require us to shed our gnarled bark, our barriers of privilege, to be vulnerable, to get comfortable with the inevitable aches and discomforts of real change. These are the only way to wrap ourselves and others in those layers of dynamic compassion about which the poet writes. To create the world we dream about at the end of the revolution, which will likely be beyond our lifetimes, we have to live our lives with the vulnerability, kindness, sense of justice, and love of each other as equals that we wish to see in our larger world. We have to create this in our daily lives, our families, our relationships, our communities, right here within these very church walls, and then carry it beyond them. And the lovely thing is, doing that is what will provide us with the resilience to sustain that larger revolution. I'm currently reading The Mixed Marriage Project, a memoir of love, race, and family, a book by award-winning researcher and author on racism, class, and gender, Dorothy Roberts. I've also been listening to interviews with Roberts about it, and in those interviews, she talks about how she grapples with her white father's and later her black mother's research, in which they interviewed couples, interracial couples, over several decades. Had her mother been a part of her father's research? How had she herself fit into this project? Could she resolve the disagreement she had held with her father over whether interracial intimacy could be a part of dismantling racial hierarchies in our country, as opposed to the structural changes on which she had been concentrating? I want to let you hear her describe what she came to.
Throughout my career, I have shied away from the issue of interracial intimacy and interracial marriage. I never really tackled that. And I've always thought that it wasn't as important a topic as the ones I was working on. And I think part of it also was this debate I had with my father about whether interracial intimacy could overcome racism. And because I felt so strongly that it could not, I think I shied away from grappling with that question in my own research. But as I read the interviews stretching from the 1930s to the 1960s, and he actually went on to interview couples into the 1980s, I started to change my view of that because it was so clear to me that the regulation of race and family and interracial intimacy, interracial marriage, has been such an important way that the government has reinforced a racial hierarchy. And so, you know, if I'm going to be concerned about a racial hierarchy and I want to dismantle it, I think that this topic is one that I should wrestle with. I think it's really important to grapple with the question of how do we love each other in a racist society? How can we cross the huge chasm of race that's been created and reinforced historically in America to be able to love each other as equal human beings? And I began to see that that actually is the question I've been asking throughout my career. And my father's papers and working on the memoir and really wrestling more with it was a transformative experience for me.
Elsewhere, she also talks of how she came to reconcile her father's passion for his research, which began before he met her mother, with his deep love and commitment to her mother and to his family. I wonder if before we can fully work for abstract notions of equality in our world, we have to engage in lived experiences of loving equally in our own lives. Now, of course, that could be friendships and other types of relationships, but I do think we have to be in equitable relationship across our differences if we ever hope to create change together in solidarity. Maybe part of the revolution, then, is learning not just to love across difference, but to love difference itself. Now, this creating relationships in which we love our multiple beautiful ways of being human, love each other as equal human beings in our daily lives and in our communities, it is a vital part of how we might sustain the long revolution through what researcher, author, and poet Margaret J. Wheatley calls islands of sanity. You heard some of her words from Angela earlier. Here's how she describes this. An island of sanity is a gift of possibility and refuge created by people's commitment to form healthy community to do meaningful work. It requires unshakable faith in people's innate generosity, creativity, and kindness. It sets itself apart as an island to protect itself from the life-destroying dynamics, policies, and behaviors that oppress and deny the human spirit. No matter what is happening around us, we can discover practices that enliven our human spirits and produce meaningful contributions for this time. Sounds a lot like what we aspire to in this religious community, doesn't it? And I think the folks in the communities throughout Minneapolis and surrounding areas have created their own beautiful version of this, forming networks of support, providing one another mutual aid, setting up rapid response communication systems to warn each other of danger when the federal invasion was drawing close to their communities, and to expose the violence being perpetrated upon their communities. They set up loving communities of mutuality, love, and support, regular folks defending and taking care of each other that model the world of which we dream, the beloved community for which we strive. And from there, the revolution spreads. Not far from us, in San Antonio, a young woman named Ashley Fairbanks was horrified as she watched the news pour out of her hometown of Minneapolis. She used her social media and website design skills to launch a site called Stand With Minnesota. The site was designed to provide direct assistance to those families under siege there. That site has received over 2.5 million hits and resulted in over $20 million in aid being sent to Minnesotans put at risk by the actions of ICE and other federal agents. Now, this is not a charitable organization. It simply helps neighbors connect with neighbors, people connect with people from across the country to provide aid for folks who have been unable to pay rent, afford transportation costs, shop, obtain food, tend to the many basic necessities of life for fear of being endangered by federal agents, or because parents have been separated from children, or when folks have been removed from their homes and taken to detention centers halfway across the country. What started as just one person's project has created islands of sanity in a sea of ideologically driven, intentionally created chaos. And I think creating these islands of sanity will also involve doing what Reverend Carey and so many other religious professionals did in answering the call to go to Minnesota. They not only join folks in those communities in solidarity, witness, and support, they leverage whatever status and privilege may have come from being a faith leader, any other social locations they might hold, to amplify that witness and support. And they were willing to put that privilege, indeed their own bodies and physical well-being, at risk to be in solidarity. Sustaining the long revolution will require that more and more of us be willing to do the same in order to create those relationships of love as equals, the islands of sanity we will need to survive the seas of chaos that will continue to be thrown our way. Now, I want to hasten to add that movement organizing, vigils, marches, voting, political activism, the types of social political justice work in which our own Social Action Council and our Texas Unitarian Universalist Justice Ministry engage, those actions aimed at creating change at the structural level, those actions are vital and necessary too. Those activities and the islands of sanity we've been talking about go hand in hand. Living life and creating communities with the vulnerability, kindness, sense of justice, and love of each other as equals that we wish to see in our world will help give us the resilience we need to sustain our structural political activism. And the islands of sanity can provide the beginning of a model, an infrastructure that could be built upon on our way to that revolutionary end, the beloved community. My beloveds, this revolution will not end quickly. It will at times be difficult and heartbreaking. We may not know how it ends in our lifetimes. Centered in a fierce love, though, may we soften our hearts, learn to be with what aches, my dears, trust the discomfort, so that what thickens around us are layers of dynamic compassion, vital, vulnerable, ever growing. This is the powerful spiritual strength that will carry us through the long revolution. Amen.
Please join me now in the words by which we extinguish the chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we hold in our hearts until we are together again.
For our benediction today, I leave you with more poetry from Rosemary Wattola Traumer. It's titled, Impossible Generosity. I want to give you what I could not give you. A world where there is no hurt or grief. A world where you don't know ravaged and sleepless nights. Don't know mornings too quiet. Or the color of dirt in the cemetery. Because I cannot give you this, I want to give you the certainty that you can live fully in a world where there is hurt and grief, and that you can meet what is most painful and at the same time turn toward what is beautiful. I want to give you a love so safe that you grow into yourself certain that there is nothing you can do or not do that would keep me from loving you. I have been loved like this too, and did not know the enormity of the gift until I longed to give it to you. I want you to take it for granted that love is so vast, so unshakable, so true. I want to give you the belief in your resilience, want you to know yourself as a flower that grows more vigorously after it's been cut back. I would keep the hands from cutting you, but since I can't do that, I want to be the rain, the soil, the sun. I want to give you what cannot be given. Want to give you what you have given me. The astonishment of living with you in a time of hurt and grief, and the miracle of watching you grow. May the congregation say amen,
amen.
And blessed be.
Blessed be.
I love you fiercely. Go in peace.
This is a production of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, go to our website at austinuu.org.